City cluster. With Radio Racket Radio News, I'm Kyle DeWitt.
Program is in living color and has been rated X by the Vietnam Academy of Magic. This is Radio First Terminal, operating on Dave Rabbit's own frequency at 69 megacycles on your FM dial. The purpose of this program is to bring vital news, information, and hard acid rock music to the First Terminals and non-universities in the Republic of Vietnam. Radio First Terminal operates under no Air Force regulations or manuals. In the event of a vice squad raid, this program will automatically self-destruct. Your host tonight, Dave Rabbit.
And this is Dave Rabbit, along with my studio engineer, Pete Sadler. Bringing you tonight, hard acid rock music to blow your mind with. Blood Rock 2. Dead Cross. Cooking from the Big 69. Blood Rock 2, Double Cross. Good evening again, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host for the next 3 hours of hard acid rock music, Dave Rabbit, and my studio engineer, Pete Sadler. For those of you who have just recently come into the Republic of Vietnam, I'd like to give you a little information about it so your mind won't be quite so blown when you hear such words as fuck and words of that nature. We're an underground radio station here, and we say what we feel like saying, and we bring the truth to the first termers in the Republic of Vietnam.
You got to change your evil ways.
We also bring you hard acid rock music all through the night. The up-to-date music of today's American youth.
Baby, and every word that I say is
Carlos Santana. Evil ways.
Oh. The voice you heard right there was from 1971. And all we knew, and all we still know, I guess, at this point, is that it was a guy by the name of Dave Rabbit, a pseudonym. We still don't know what his real name is, and we may not ever know. But one thing we do know is that after, I don't want to say many, many years in hiding, because that sounds quite clandestine, right?
But he didn't know he was hiding.
I think that's the best part about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, this really, he did not know that people were still talking about the show until, I believe, February of this year.
So he decided to come forward to get rid of some of the many myths and some of the inaccuracies, and also to just kind of tell the story of what the hell happened there 35 years ago. We have the legendary Dave Rabbit. Dave, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hold on for a second, Dave. What happened? Is it potted up?
It is potted up.
It is potted up. Why are we not hearing it?
Is the phone thing punched in?
Yeah, it should not be. Everything's fine. Hold on, Dave. We were trying something new here. Sorry about that. What's going on here? All right, try that. Roscoe is the... There you go. Dave, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right, Roscoe, you didn't have it potted up. It was all Roscoe's fault.
It's this newfangled system you got here, George.
Jagass.
Your biggest fan here, and he forgot to pot you up.
Well, I've been potted up before.
Yeah. Dave, we're glad you're here.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming on with us.
It really
is a pleasure to talk to you and meet the person after all these years. And I've heard clips of the show on the internet going back 14 years, something like that. And you just, I'm guessing you found out about this just recently.
Yeah, February 9th, 2006, when I'm on the internet trying to find something for my kiddos in high school, and I come across a website that's got a couple of audio clips on it. It says Radio First Term. I click on it, and, you know, it goes to Will Snyder's homepage, and I'm going, you know, Jesus Christ, man. Here's a page dedicated to me, and he's got the Freedom of Information Act where he's, you know, contacted all the powers that be in the government.
Yes, I remember that.
Trying to track me down. I'm going, oh, shit, man. Then I start looking out my back door, you know.
You're thinking court-martial.
I'm thinking, you know, oh, shit, this is what I need is, you know, to be on the Internet. And then I start doing a search, and, I mean, there's like, you know, 135 sites that's got all my audio clips. They've got all kinds of theory things. One of the neatest places that's become kind of my official forum home was called Above Top Secret. And it's a site dedicated to conspiracy theories. I mean, they've got alien conspiracy theories. They've got JFK conspiracy theories. They've got black helicopters. And they've got all these other things. And one of the things that was on there was this guy saying that I was a conspiracy of the United States government. In other words, the United States government created Dave Rabbit.
And you're reading
and I'm
this.
Going, what the hell is this? Yeah.
So you had no idea about the cult following that was going on all of these years?
No, none. Zippo.
Well, I guess amazing. I was reading some of the sites with information about your story, and I guess the first time you ever realized that there was even a tape was back at, you ran into a gentleman at a party in the 80s?
Yeah, it was 82.
Yeah, so at that point is only 9 years after the fact.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually, it was 11 years.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
I'm at a party, and you know how it is when you go to parties. You're sitting there and you're shooting a breeze with people, and this guy says, did you ever serve in the military? And I said, yeah. And I said, how about you? He said, yeah. He said, I was in the Army, and I was stationed at Wiesbaden, Germany. And I said, oh, great. And he says, well, where were you at? And I says, I was in Vietnam. And he says, did you ever hear of Dave Rabbit? And I said,
I think I heard of him.
I said, you know, it kind of really caught me off guard. And I said, how do you know about Dave Rabbit? He says, oh, he's real popular in Germany. And I said, how the hell is he popular in Germany? The last show he did was in 1971.
Right.
He says, well, somebody's recorded one of his shows, and, it's been propagated, and there's literally thousands of copies, you know, going all over Germany and, you know, worldwide now, and, blah, 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 blah. And so I said, well, I said, you're not going to believe this. I said, but I'm Dave Rabbit. He said, yeah, sure you are, and, you know, I'm Adolf Hitler.
Right.
I said, no, seriously. He says, well, if you're Dave Rabbit, he says, do one of your latrine sayings. And I said, okay. Please don't throw toothpicks in the toilet. Crabs can pole vault. And he goes, damn, you are Dave Rabbit. And I, yeah, I am. And so anyway, the long and the short of it is, he had a copy of the tape, and he made me a copy. And so 11 years after the show shut down, I realized that someone had actually recorded a copy of the show, and, you know, that blew me away. I mean, that blew me away.
Now, let's go back to 1971 Saigon. You guys are on the air, and one of the things that I think interests all three of us for obvious reasons is that you guys broadcasted on the second floor of a massage parlor in Saigon.
It was a whorehouse, and actually we were on the fifth or sixth floor. Second floor was too close to the street, too
right.
much noise. It was like a five or six story, as best I can remember, it may have been eight stories, but it was like a five or six story combination hotel slash whorehouse slash massage house, you know, a GI's dream come true, basically facility.
Now, how did
that's
you...
That's where we broadcasted out of.
Now, how did you come to the agreement with the madam?
Oh, that was easy because Pete was her number one client. So, well, you know, he was down there banging beaver every day. You know,
right on, brother.
Well, I mean, you know, some people are actually, you know, doing something intelligent, like, you know, sending money back home to mom or whatever. And, you know, Pete's down there banging beaver every night. So, we had a pretty good relationship with her.
And right. You guys were good friends. You guys still keep in touch to this day?
No, you know. It's funny about military relationships or military friendships, and I guess any any veteran can tell you that. I mean, there's some exceptions, obviously. But we stayed in touch maybe 3 to 4 years. And then, you know, everybody kind of went through relationship changes and all kinds of things. And, you know, you lose address books or you lose phone numbers and, you know, you kind of lose contact. So I haven't seen them or talked to them probably since 1974.
Now, how,
75 maybe.
Now, how did you go about getting the show's principals? How did that come about where you settled on the three of you?
Well, Pete was a no-brainer because Pete was in personnel when I was at Fan Rang. And Fan Rang was my second tour of duty. And at Fan Rang is when I got involved with my roommate who was with the real broadcasting, the real AFBN kind of arm of the military. And he was starting a show. AFBN made an agreement with all the bases where they were going to allow them to do a local show where they could do local programming of the individual Air Force bases and the surrounding areas. And he was going to do a show, and we were roommates, and he said, say, would you like to be a studio engineer? And I said, you know, I don't know anything about being a studio engineer, but sure, you know, I'll help you. And so I did, and that's really what got in my blood and kind of gave me the fever. Of course, it was a, you know, it was the, we had a major that was in charge of the little broadcast group. And this guy was really queer for like, you know, Montavani, you know, Percy Faith, the Fifth Dimension, you know, and I mean...
kind of like Lieutenant Hawk.
Crap like that. So, I mean, it was not, you know, I mean, it was putting the troops to sleep, you know. I mean, you know, you're out there on a post trying to, you know, keep the base secure from VC, and, you know, you're sitting there listening to Percy Faith. So I convinced them, maybe a couple of months into the show, to add some humor to it, and that's when they allowed me to do the Charlie's Request line. And it's a bit I did where I'd go into the next office, and of course I knew the extension into the studio, and I would call it up, and I'd go, we want to hear rock and roll. We don't want to hear no fucking Butsy Faith. You know, and then, of course, they would, you know, the guy would play my straight man, basically. He'd go, well, now, Charlie, you know, the major wants Percy Faith, you know, and all this stuff. And it got to be kind of a humorous little thing. And, of course, the funny thing was, like, finding out the next day people's reaction. And when I found out people's reaction to the humor aspect of the thing, I mean, it just, you know, I just went skyrocketed, you know, as far as how I felt about the show and about that. And, of course, in that year, I met Pete, and Pete was in personnel, and he and I became good friends. And when I got ready to leave Fan Rang, I didn't want to go back and play a stateside roulette on going to another base that I didn't care for. So Pete arranged for me to have another assignment, another PCS assignment, at Tonsonute, which was in Saigon, and he arranged to have him go too. And so when we got to Saigon, we basically arrived together after a 30-day leave, and I became roommates in headquarters squadron. And within a month or two, after seeing all the things that we started seeing and hearing all the things that we started hearing and seeing all the lies and the BS that the troops were being told, we decided that we were going to start a show, and that's how the whole thing got started.
And also, I guess Nugent was part of that as well.
Do what? I'm sorry.
Nugent, the female part of the show.
Nugent was really kind of a no-brainer because she worked for AFVN. She wasn't in the broadcast group, so you know, it was very easy for her to get us stuff. A lot of the your Air Force in Action crap that we used to play. She would nab for us because that was all headquarters 7th Air Force AFVN stuff. So yeah, she was great. She hated the whorehouse. So a lot of the stuff that she did, like the intros and doing the news, you know, we kind of pre-recorded. And secondly, you know, a female going into a whorehouse, you know, I mean, she wasn't a lesbian. She was probably one of the few WAFs that wasn't a lesbian, but she was straight, and so she just didn't like going in there you know, it was kind of a strange deal. But we had a, we went through the back door. I mean, it's not like we were, you know, downtown Saigon walking in
with
you know, two guys and a chick. That's going to look like a menage a trois. Of course, I'm sure there was a lot of that going on in that house, but, you know, that wasn't what we were doing.
Well, one of the things that's kind of amazing to us is the fact that you guys did so much preparation for these broadcasts, and you put so many months into it, and you only got to do 21 shows. I mean,
yeah.
And I guess towards the end, you don't really, I mean, in what I've read, it isn't exactly clear why you guys shut down. But I'm guessing that probably for obvious reasons you felt the heat and, you know, you were getting too popular and you know, you just didn't want to be caught would be my guess.
Well, you know, the biggest reason is, you first off, you have to understand that the Vietnam War, there was a tremendous underground anti-war movement within the military itself, which I'm sure you've heard of the documentary that David Zeiger created, Sir, No Sir. And so, you know, a lot of the people that knew about us, and there wasn't that many, but a lot of them that did are the ones that kind of jumped on board as the show started really gaining momentum, were actually the ones that were supposed to be trying to find us.
Right.
And, I mean, we had friends, insiders, I call them the Dave Rabbit Insider Club, DRIC. Those guys, we had people from OSI, which is Office of Special Investigation, kind of like the Air Force's FBI, if you will. We had security police guys. We had people in headquarters. Of course, we had Nugent, and we had one other person at AFDN. We had almost pretty much all the radio relay guys who boosted our signal throughout Southeast Asia, Cambodia, and Laos.
So you had a nice little team going.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody kind of believed in what we were doing. You know, I mean, it wasn't, you know, I mean, it was an anti-war show, but it was more support the troops, you know, and let everything else fall where it does. And, you know, the whole momentum of the show, as it got more popular, it really got to be real difficult to continue to do shows. In fact, on the day that we shut down, and we knew probably by the 20th show, the 18th show, something, about two or three shows before we finally quit, we knew that we were running on thin ice. The base commander hated my guts.
Which you clearly state in some of the broadcasts.
I fucked with this guy all the time, you know. I mean, every show was something, you know, that you know, was, you know, calling him a faggot, or he's, you know, carrying a velvet purse, and, you know, we did several commercials about him, and you know, always did some comics and gigs. And, I mean, this guy, I know for a fact, he'd go into meetings, and he'd have all these little underlings with him, and he'd say, I don't care if another fucking North Vietnamese target's ever attacked, I want that fucking Dave Rabbit's head. I mean, he didn't say that maybe in those such words, but that's kind of what he was trying to tell people.
Right. And
the more they started looking for us, the really scarier we became, because, I mean, we weren't talking about, well, boys, don't do it again. We were talking about going to Long Bend prison.
And those were serious consequences.
And
I mean,
they were, well, yeah, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you know, I mean, it was prison time. So this guy came up to me that was a very close associate in the security police, and he was one of the senior people that were supposed to be trying to find us, and said, you guys got to stop. And I said, okay. And I said, when? He said, you need to stop now. He said, because they are putting so much pressure on us to find you guys that, you know, if you guys don't stop, they're going to think we are in cahoots.
So I would imagine even with...
Yeah, and I can't afford to do that. So, you know, that's how I went up to the studio that night and told Pete and Nugent. I said, you know, this is it. And so at the end of the show, I said, good night, Vietnam, and good luck. And that was at 11 p.m. on January 21st, 1971, and we never did it again.
So you had friends in high places is what it comes down to. I mean, you had people that, you know, on one hand were supposed to, you know, go out and search for you and hunt you down, but on the other hand were probably laughing just as much as all the other GIs.
Oh, and nobody was any wiser to it, because nobody really realized how deep the anti-war support was within the military, and I mean all branches of the military. I mean, there was Army units that were refusing to take hills and saying, you know, hey, fuck you, we ain't gonna do it. You know, you come get, you know, get some other guys to do it. I mean, it's documented evidence of all those things. So, I mean, there was, it wasn't like, you know, if it had been World War II, there's no way we probably could have done it. You know, because everything in World War II was, you know, I mean, you know, over there, you know, I mean, the mentality or whatever. Vietnam was a different ballgame altogether. You know, a different ballgame.
We're talking with Dave Rabbit, the legendary pirate. I don't even know if he likes that term, but we'll ask him right after we give out the phone numbers. I know there are a lot of people who want to speak with you, Dave, so we'll tell everyone you can call 215-609-4315 in the Philadelphia area. Anywhere else, there's a New York number for the rest of the world, 718-841-7702, and we'll get you right on here, and you can ask Dave Rabbit about, just about almost anything you want. Dave, it sounds like, I know you said that you had worked briefly at AFVN, right?
No, I never worked at AFVN.
Oh, I thought you had said that you'd done...
Nugent worked.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Had you done any radio at all, though?
Only what I did at Fan Rang, at Radio First Drummer.
So nothing back at the States before you went there, then? That really is amazing, though, and Roscoe, I know we were talking about this, when you listen to the one tape that survives, and unfortunately there nothing else, I guess, has surfaced over the years, it really does sound as though...
You know what the hell you're doing.
You really knew what you were doing when it came to how to do a radio show.
Well, see, but a lot of that has to do with my rock music background, because I had a rock band for 3 years in high school, and, you know, I was used to being in front of people, and I was used to being, you know... used to it being a dig me thing, you know, and I mean, let's face it, guys. I mean, you know, the upside to radio is that, you know, it's a real egotistical playing field. The downside to it, as we all know, is that, you know, you're talking to a microphone and you hope that, you know, that there's someone listening to you, and until you get that validation, until someone comes up and says, "Geez, man, you know, what a great show." I mean, you know, you really don't know if you've really affected anybody. And, I mean, it, you know, the 82 thing when the guy said, hey, blah, 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 I mean, that really rocked my world. But what really rocked my world, besides finding out all this stuff on the Internet, was getting an email from this GI and said something to the effect of, you know, how much I affected his group and the things that they were doing, and how much they looked forward to the shows, and, you know, it gave them a break from, you know, body bags and conflict, and I mean, you know, when I got that, I knew that I made a difference, and making a difference, I can't tell you how it rocked me. It just really leveled me. It really did.
Did you ever get anyone who may have encountered you who realized who you were, that maybe didn't say, I'm going to turn you in, but, you know, I really don't like what you guys are doing. You're hurting morale. I mean, did that ever come up?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, it's like anything. I mean, you know, you're giving opinions and whatever. And, I mean, our shows were, you know, I mean, they were out there. I mean, you know, Howard Stern, you know, was not even a stain on the carpet, you know, compared to what we were doing in 71. And, you know, we had people that, you know, we got feedback that, you know, well, you guys are, you know, you're hurting the morale of the troops and all this other shit. And, you know, they were very much in the minority because, I mean, when you got guys, you know, wearing, you know, buying these little posters we made in Saigon, it says Rabbit Power with a peace sign and stuff. And we made, like, you know, we had the, the Papa San merchants, you know, make these, you know, these Dave Rabbit sweatshirts with, you know, the rabbit with his dick on hard, you know, carrying the sign that says, you know, fuck it before it fucks you. And, I mean, we made like 250 of those things. I mean, those son of bitches sold out, I mean, within like, 10 minutes. You know? And so, you know, guys that were, you know, off duty in their downtown, I mean, there was one night, I mean, this is hilarious. There was about two days after we did the shirts and then they sold out. There was some kind of bar, I don't even remember the name, but there was some kind of bar downtown that was, had a band, it was a Vietnamese band, you know, young guys. And these guys were absolutely fantastic. I mean, if you close your eyes you would believe that the Beatles were right there in front of you doing a live concert. I mean, these guys sounded exactly like the Beatles. Their music was fantastic, and their lyrics was fantastic. And, you know, in that club, you know, I'm looking around. This is, you know, after the show, and I'm looking around, and there's about, you know, 60 or 70 GIs in there with Dave Rabbit fuck you shirts, you know? And, I mean, it was really something to see that, you know, there's, you know, people are just saying, you know, well, you know, we don't care whether you like it or not. You know, we like Dave Rabbit, and, you know, we're going to wear the shirt and whatever. Now, they didn't wear them on the base, obviously.
And the base commander's there watching all this.
You know, the base commander, you know, he was a prick, you know. He thought, you know, the morale on the base was, you know, something that, you know, required, you know, highly polished shoes and fucking quarters bouncing off the bed, you know. And we're going, God damn, man, we're in a fucking war zone, you know. I mean, you know, oh, let's see how much the quarter can bounce off the bed, you know. And just that mentality and the you know, all the troops hated the guy, you know. And so all I did was really just vent their anger towards this guy, you know, and say to him on air what everybody was thinking. I mean, you should have seen the latrine walls. I mean, you know, the commander blows, you know, I mean, just on and on, on and on.
How hard was it to put all of the equipment together, and how much of it did you actually do yourself? And I know you said you had a lot of help, but that had to have taken some know-how.
Well, you know, I was in supply. Well, one thing that gave me the edge was my fan ring experience, because I saw how everything was hooked up and whatever, and Pete was really the genius when it came to setting up the equipment. I don't know how you guys, you know, do yours, but, you know, I mean, I know how to get on the radio and talk, okay? I know how to cut my mic on, and I know how to use a mixer. And other than that, you know, I mean, there's 17 jillion wires, you know, that you connect things to. And, I mean, I wouldn't want to screw with that for all the tea in China. So Pete did a lot of that. Now, the equipment was a no-brainer because I was in supply, and I had tremendous deep contacts in supply. And I got all the equipment, brand new, Akai reel-to-reel decks. I got three of them through a contact of mine that procured things for Vietnam's VX and PX supply system. And, you know, that's where the guys would go in there, the troops would go in there, and, you know, they'd buy cameras or, you know, tape decks or whatever. So he acquired me, you know, three brand-new Akai decks. And then, you know, we had microphones and, you know, all the other gizmos and you know, we got the cords were a no-brainer. And then Pete put it together, and then the radio relay guys, the friends of ours, and their contacts in Saigon, they did everything to where we could piggyback on the AFVN tower and broadcast our signal through the same relay system that they were broadcasting theirs.
That's great.
So you're telling me that you were using government-issue equipment here? In a lot of cases.
Well, I mean, it wasn't government issue. It was like, you know, if troops wanted to buy something, you know, like a camera, if I go in there and buy a camera at the BX or the PX, that's not government issue. It's just something I want to buy on a commercial basis, like going into the Best Buy or whoever.
So you're still using your own money then? But that.
Well, actually, we didn't use our own money. We just kind of. He gave it to us.
Huh.
We took it out of their supply link, if you know what I mean. Midnight supply.
So now, how, like, where was your transmitter actually located, and, you know, how did you get the signal from there to the
right, because
armed forces tower?
You would have to hide the antenna, I guess, right? Or were you able to just bury it in with everything else?
No, what you have to understand is, AFVN originally, they carried their signal by aircraft. They had aircraft that would fly over and would bounce the signals down to the different areas. Now, I'm not an expert in radio relay. You know, that's not my expertise. But the guys that I met in Phan Rang and the friends that I made in the radio relay groups, you know, I mean, those are the guys that really were the geniuses of the thing. But theoretically, what happened is we used There was towers that were spread out through Southeast Asia, and AFVN would boost their signal and go from one relay tower using microwave dishes or whatever the technology was, and they would send it to another tower, and then they would send that from that tower to another tower, and that's how the AFVN signal got throughout Southeast Asia, Cambodia, and Laos, is because of that signal. And so what our guys did is they took a dish, we put it up on top of the whorehouse, and our signal was transmitted to AFVN's towers, and then the radio relay guys in Saigon get our feed and put our feed in, and we went out on a different frequency than AFVN was.
And all the while they're playing their Percy Faith records.
they weren't necessarily, AFVN wasn't necessarily doing Percy Faith. I mean, you know, they were doing bubblegum stuff, you know. But they had, you know, like they had 1 hour where the guy would do country and western, and another where, you know, they played something else. But, I mean, they never played, you know, blood rock or hard rock or any of that kind of stuff.
I think one of the funny things that I read on one of the websites is you guys, especially with the T-shirts and some of the other things, like for troops who wanted to write you letters, you actually gave out post office boxes and telephone extensions, and the local post office would get flooded with all kinds of letters and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, they couldn't deliver it to you because...
The Tonsonute post office, they got literally hundreds, probably several thousand even, but... I know they had literally hundreds of postcards with you know, MPC and attached to it, trying to get, you know, buy shirts and you know, the picture, the Dave Rabbit picture, and you know, all the other stuff. So yeah, we know for a fact. And of course, what they did is, you know, they put it where, you know, the letters to Santa go, right in the trash can, I'm sure.
Yeah, your phone calls are welcome. Your opportunity to say hi and ask a question to Dave Rabbit, 215-609-4315. And also, we've got 718-841-7702. It is the Radio Racket on a Friday night here at Audio 18 with Dave Rabbit. Dave, I've got to ask you, certainly over the years, even before you realized what a cult following had developed, what have you found out about the statute of limitations, about what, is there any way they could cause trouble for you now after all of these years? And that's got to be in the back of your mind, right?
No. It was a concern, but I have like a cluster of attorneys that specialize in that kind of thing that are Dave Rabbit fans that jumped on board and became my Dave Rabbit legal team, if you will.
That's
and,
great.
You know, I can't be touched with a 10-foot pole because, I mean, the statute of limitations is long since gone. I mean, we're talking about 35 years since I've been in the military, and there's a 7-year uniform code of military justice statute deal. So I'm well beyond that. And, you know, secondly, I mean, the government, I mean, what are they going to do, take this 58-year-old guy and say, okay, by God, you mail these comments back there in Saigon, and we're going to make you pay. You know, I mean, we got the fucking North Koreans getting ready to nuke everybody, and I think Dave Rabbit's not real high on their list.
Now, you're even involved, though, in you're trying to do something. I'm not 100% sure if I would say it was similar, but you're going to Baghdad or you've got a team.
Yeah. In September, we're going to Baghdad. We're going to do the Radio First Termer Iraq show, and I have a new studio engineer, Charlie Cooper. And we have a new lady, Nadira, and we've got, you know, a couple of people that are going to help us in the studio. We got a local Iraqi janitor we're going to use, Omar Bin Fucking, and he's going to help us out. And we're going to have Captain Pansy, of course, retired, so he's going to come over there with us in Ralph, and they're going to be doing some weather for us, and it's going to be a fun deal. We're going to broadcast live sometime this coming September. Not sure of the exact date, but we got to get our passports in order and all that other stuff, and then we're going to go over there and give the Iraq troops a boost and help them morale and give them some fun and and you know, support what we've always wanted to do, and that's the troops.
And this is government sanctioned?
Hell no.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, no. The government's not, no, they're not opening up their open arms with us. But, you know, I'm kind of a kinder, gentler Dave, you know, I guess at 58 and 35 years later. But, you know, still my main mission is to support the troops. And, you know, that's the way I will do till, you know, the day I die. And, you know, those guys are the ones that give us the right to sit there and say the things we want to say, whether it be satellite radio, internet, or, you know, traditional radio. And, you know, as long as they're there and put in harm's way, then I'm going to continue to do everything I can to bring them a laugh or, you know, give them something to smile about, to sidetrack them a little bit from what the reality that they're facing every day is.
So how come once you got back to the U.S., I think you said in May of 71.
Right.
How come you didn't pursue broadcasting when you came home?
Family. My dad had a company that he owned, and he was in kind of failing health. And, you know, it was kind of a decision made for me. It's not something that, looking back on it, I wish, you know, that was the way that it happened. But, you know, I had a family that I loved, and they needed me. And so, you know, it was pretty much a path that was laid before me that, you know, I had no way to change. Now, one thing that's interesting is I got involved in doing a Masters of Ceremony work for the Miss America pageant system, and became an MC and did a lot of their individual little franchise kind of pageants, you know.
Were they aware of your Radio First Termer work?
No. No. Nobody, you know, I mean, Dave Rabbit's name never was mentioned again up until, you know, the 82 incident, and then, you know, just this recent February. I mean, it was not something that I just... You know, my family knew, you know, my kiddos knew, a few of my personal friends knew, but, I mean, you know, hey, yeah, I was a disc jockey in Vietnam. Oh, really? Well, here, pass the tomatoes. Yeah. And, you know, now that it's really come out and all these magical things are happening and, you know, movie companies are calling us and, you know, book companies wanting to do a book and all this other stuff. Now all this stuff is really taking place. I mean, everybody's starting to go, well, you know, hey, you know. So it's an interesting ride. It really has been.
Now, so I guess you're sort of the hardcore Adrian Cronauer, I guess.
Well, you know, Adrian, you know, this is kind of a real interesting story. Adrian, he was there in 1965, and of course he was with AFEN. And Adrian would tell you, and you can see it on probably any site that you want to go to, the Robin Williams movie, Good Morning Vietnam, about 80 to 90% of the stuff that was portrayed in the movie, Adrian Cronauer never did.
Really?
I mean, a guy did a post one time on the site, and he said, when I came out, he said, you know, geez, he says, did they get any of the stuff from, you know, when they were doing the research, you know, about you? And I said, you know, there's no way to prove one way or the other, but, you know, by Adrian Cronauer's own admission, you know, they really improvised a lot, either for A, Robin Williams' personality, which is fairly logical,
right,
or B, they got a hold of some of the off-the-wall crap I did and said, you know, man, that's a perfect fit. So I think it was a combination of Adrian Cronauer's real life plus some outside sources.
Poetic
now,
license.
Whether it was me, I can't tell you, you
right.
know, honestly.
So what, I mean, do you think there could be a Dave Rabbit Radio First Termer, you know, feature-length motion picture in the future?
There's several movie companies. In fact, I just got through killing a deal. The one reason I killed the deal, and, you know, they, you know, people say, when I tell them, they say, gee, you know, man, why don't you kill that deal? Well, they want to be real restrictive with me, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't want me to do what I'm doing right now.
And that's not what Rabbit Power is all about.
You know, they don't want me to, you know, do my homepage. They don't want me to do Podomatic, which is where my podcast homepage. And, you know, they don't want me to do a lot of things, and, you know, don't want me to do any interviews, don't want me to do any TV appearances or whatever. And because they want to protect their rights, their property. And so in the process of negotiation and whatever, you know, I just reached a point to where I said, you know, I've only been doing this since February, you know, and it's been 35 years since I've done it. Mm-hmm. And do I really want to lock myself up and shackle my hands for 18 months on a what if?
Right.
Okay? Because you're really only talking about a what if. Because to do the real Radio First Number show is easily a $10 to $20 million project. And the reason is because of the music.
Right.
Okay.
The licensing.
Yeah. Dave Rabbit is a DJ, okay? Notorious, maybe. Historical, who knows. But the music is what made the entertainment aspect to the troops. That's what they weren't getting in the field. You know, that's the things they wanted to hear. They wanted to hear Led Zeppelin. They wanted to hear Blood Rock. You know, they wanted to hear all those bands that, you know, the 60s child grew up with. They didn't want to hear, you know, the Cow Sills. Jesus Christ, if I ever hear that song again, I think I'm going to throw up. You know, so that's the mentality of it, you see?
Right. Now, how much activity are you getting on your websites? And
we're getting tons of hits. Tons of hits. We're averaging anywhere between 1,000 to 2,000 hits a day.
Wow. And is it just getting bigger as time goes
forward?
Yeah,
it's growing. And then with my affiliation with my good friend Springer at Above Top Secret, who's one of the partners, they created my own forum there, which is my official forum at AboveTopSecret.com. And, that thing's really just gone by leaps and bounds. And, I mean, they're getting like, it's not hits. I think it's the unique IP address. There's some way that they ascertain how many different people, how many different, you know, I mean, yeah, a hit could be one guy sitting there, you know, with a bottle of lotion, you know, and watching porn and, you know, clicking on a website 100 times. But they have some kind of deal to where it's by unique IP addresses, and they're getting something like, oh, God, I know Springer's listening, and he's going to go, it wasn't that figure. But it's some astronomical figure.
Okay.
I mean, like 60,000 a day hits or something.
And I'm guessing you probably reconnected with a lot of probably old buddies and people maybe that listened to you way back when that you never had a chance to meet.
Well, you know what's really funny is it's not so much that is that I've reconnected with my roots, people that, you know, when you're in the military and you're in a war zone, you have a kinship with people, you know. And the thing that's been most beneficial for me is that reconnection with the mentality that all of us had at the time, and people saying, man, I remember hearing your shows, and I remember where I was. I mean, it's a positive rekindling of thought as opposed to, oh, man, that's the day my friend got killed. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a positive reconnection, and that's really been an electric experience.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It must be.
Have you ever had any kind of a decent estimation? I guess this would be very difficult to do, but has anyone ever attempted to try to figure out how many people during January of 1971 at least heard part of your broadcasts?
I know I can say safely that the first day probably, you know, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 GIs. One thing you have to understand is a lot of things happened in Vietnam that were word of mouth. Okay,
And you got the word out on AFN's own frequency, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we announced our show and overrode their signal.
That's awesome.
Which didn't please them at all. And that's really what got the base commander and I on the Discord, because I think he was scheduled to do some kind of one of his live the commander says bullshit things. And we preempted him, I think. I can't remember, but you know, we basically said, you know, hey, there's a new radio station in town, and if you don't listen, you know, we're going to re-up you for another tour, and gave them, you know, our call sign and all that. And as the each show progressed, I mean, it the numbers just started going astronomical. I mean, there was people just really, really talking. Now, you have to understand that we know that we went to Cambodia and Laos as well as Vietnam. But the only reaction that we really had during the show was right there at Tonsonut. Okay, I mean, the local Saigon area. And, you know, judging by those numbers, you know, the numbers were astronomical. I mean, you know, for that time. I mean, because you're talking about the people, the only people that could get the signal had to have an FM radio.
Right.
If they didn't have an FM radio, which there was a lot of guys in the field that didn't have AM radios. But the radio relay guys, even though we were 69 FM, they sent our signal out on several different frequencies. And one of them was an AM frequency that field radios were geared to. And I know for a fact that there were several fire bases that heard our show that were up near Pleiku and Phuket. And they got our signal from field radios. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a crazy deal because, you know, it's not like you have 100 radio stations there. You know, you've got AFN and us. So, I mean, it wasn't like there were signals going to be jumping on top of each other. So, I mean, it got by the end of the 21-day run, the numbers were astronomical. I mean, they really were.
And I think that's the most amazing thing after, you know, thinking, you know, over 35 years, this hubbub or whatever you want to call it.
All from one tape, too.
One tape.
That's amazing.
Over only a 21 show day or day run is, it's got to be, I guess, humbling or flattering to know that that you had that impact.
It blows you away. I mean, it really does. I mean, you know, I'm not kidding you. As I said before, the emails I get, I mean, every one that I get is just really amazing to a degree. I mean, people tell me stories. They tell me, you know, where they heard us, and you know, one guy wrote me an email, and this was really amazing. He was recovering from an injury, being shot, and he was in the hospital at one of the air bases. And, he emailed me and said that he remembers someone telling him about the show, and the hospital group, the guys that were injured or whatever, tuned in one night and listened to the show. And of course, they weren't allowed to listen to it after the one night, he said. But, you know, he said he got to hear the show, and he said that it gave him such a boost spirit-wise. You know, he's laying there, he's got, you know, a leg missing, and, you know, he's just really in bad shape, and he's really feeling down, and, you know, he hears us, you know, do some of the stuff, you know, where we're, you know, making fun of the idiots that were in command, and he starts laughing, and he says, you know, man, it was like giving him a shot of adrenaline. It's amazing.
Talking with Dave Rabbit on the Radio Racket. Dave, would you mind, can you hang on through the news?
No, man, you know, I'm yours, baby. You want to rock and roll? Let's do it.
All right, hold on. We're going to go to the news from one of your favorite agencies. It's the Voice of America at the top of the hour. You've got to love the irony in this, right?
Absolutely.
So it is the Radio Racket, and we do want to take some of your phone calls out there for Dave Rabbit at 215-609-4315. Also, 718-841-7702. And if you didn't get a chance to write down those phone numbers, they are up at RadioRacket.com on the main page. You can figure out how to get in touch with us, and we'd love to get you in touch with Dave Rabbit. So we're going to take a short break for the news. If it sounds like I'm slurring my speech, I am not drunk tonight. I guess I should point out that we all do this from time to time, and I basically bit the side of my mouth while eating earlier, and it seems to be swelling up more and more as the nighttime goes on. That's why I've been a little quiet. But
you know, at the risk of getting yelled at, I'm not going to make any comment.
You could. I'm sure you could have some crass thing to say. But I'm hoping we'll be able to have some of our callers do some of the work for us at 215-609-4315. Not that this is work, because this is certainly something we've been looking forward to for a while. And when we come back, I also want to tell Dave how I found out about Radio First Termer and the stuff that he had done just for those 21 shows. It seems like it's amazing when you think that you could have that much of an impact from such a short time. So we're coming right back after the Voice of America, and then it'll be more with Dave Rabbit on the radio.